Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. Today, we'd like to welcome the newest station joining our Minnesota Military Radio network this week, KDDG Albany, Minnesota, Total Country, Bob FM 105.5. And on today's show, we're going to meet the team behind Toys for Military Kids, and we'll hear the latest on prosthetics available for our wounded warriors. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
This week marks the anniversary of the Japanese attack at Pearl Harbor. As Americans, we all share a connection to that day of infamy. But as Minnesotans, we have an additional unique connection. Did you know that Minnesotans fired the first shot against the Japanese at Pearl Harbor on that day? In 1899, the Minnesota legislature authorized the formation of a naval militia. This Minnesota naval militia had chapters in Bemidji, Crosby, Duluth, and Pine City. When war was declared in 1917, the naval militia was mobilized and shipped off to the Philadelphia Naval Yard to become part of the Greater Navy. The ship that the St. Paul unit would train and fight on was the USS Ward, a World War I era destroyer. A little over 2 hours before the Japanese attack, the USS Ward, which was on duty providing security outside of Pearl Harbor, saw a submarine following a supply ship into the entrance of Pearl Harbor. The crew, all from Minnesota, fired its first shot at the sub at 6:45 a.m. The first shot missed, but a second shot from her 4-inch gun found the mark. You can see part of this history by visiting the original 4-inch gun which fired the first shot on the grounds of the Veterans Service Building in St. Paul.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now to talk about Toys for, the number four, Toys for Military Kids are Les Hansen and Mike Clark. Gentlemen, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Les, I want to start with you. You've been on the show, I think, every year that we've been on the air, and we've been talking about Toys for Military Kids, but give us a little of your background. You served in the military.
Yeah, I was in from 1969 to 1975, the 47th Infantry. And proud that I served in that period.
And Mike, you're involved in some of the Yellow Ribbon programs and a bunch of other things, and you're a proud civilian.
That is true.
Never served in the military.
Nope, my father was in World War II.
But you're doing a lot of things to help support the troops and their families.
Yes, I am.
Thank you for that. Les, we're going to come back to you now. We want to talk about Toys for Military Kids. As I recall, that was an operation that you were doing with the AUSA?
Still am with the AUSA. Actually, it started in 2002 as a way for the civilians to show support to our active reservist during Christmas. And the first 3 years I did it on my own, and last nine has been with the Association for the United States Army.
And you've been doing this now for, what did you say, 10 years?
12 years.
12 years. How did you get started looking for toys for military kids? What caused you to do this?
Well, you know, when the soldiers are deployed, the little kids understand mommy and daddy are off fighting the bad guys. But if Santa Claus can't come, they don't understand that. So for me, it was to show our support by making sure that Santa Claus always came to the families of these soldiers that were deployed.
And so did this idea just come to you one day, or did you find some military children that were disappointed with no Santa?
No, actually, I used to be a Santa Claus for the Minnesota Vikings, and so I've got a little bit of history of playing Santa Claus. And 2001, after 9/11, I wanted to re-enlist, and they wouldn't let me. And so the fall of 2002, I walked into a friend of mine's body shop, and I said, "Joe, write me out a check." And he wrote me out a check for $100, and he said, "What are you going to do with it?" And I said, "We're going to buy toys for the children of the activated reservist." That's how it all began.
And he just smiled and said, "Go get them."
He said, "Let's do it."
All right. Yeah, Mike, how did you get involved with Mr. Hansen?
Well, Les came to the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon meeting in November of 2013, and he put the idea out there that he had a ready-made database and had a good track record of raising money, and threw it out for the Yellow Ribbon to try to get more exposure in the program. And I kind of chewed on it for November and December, and he came back in January and kind of wanted to know if we were still interested, and that's when I accepted the opportunity.
So with my guess, he put you in a headlock, and you said, "Okay, I give up."
A little bit.
Unless this was just you doing your normal thing out looking for money.
Yep. I just, I love showing my appreciation for my freedom. And I believe that given the opportunity, anybody that, that either has served or never served wants to show their appreciation for all these young men and women that go off to duty and give their time and sometimes their life for our freedom.
We're speaking with Les Hansen and Mike Clark about Toys for Military Kids on Minnesota Military Radio. Les, at some point you had to determine that there was a need. How did you do that?
You know, it really was around Santa Claus. It just really revolved around making sure that these soldiers, I call everybody Navy, Army, Air Force, Marines, to me they're all soldiers, but to make sure that these military families at Christmas time had gifts under the tree for their children. That's really the bottom line.
Now, Les, a lot of our military families are proud families, and they don't step up at all times when they need help. How do you overcome that?
Well, our program is revolving around whether you're a general's child or a private's child, you get a toy. It doesn't make any difference whether you actually need them or don't need them. We just want to give them to you to show our appreciation for all the sacrifices that they've made. So there's no applications, there's no consideration other than that you served in the military, and we're there to give you a toy.
And Mike, when you first heard about this, what were your thoughts?
It sounded like a neat opportunity. I've done a number of different things in Beyond the Yellow Ribbon with a tremendous degree of success. So I thought, well, this would be one more feather to try to do, and it's worked out real well.
Mike, let's dig into that a little bit. I first met you because you were a neighbor of Colonel Mike Price, whom we had on the show several times when he was in command of the Army Corps of Engineers in St. Paul. And he had that command for about 3 years, and then he went off to Afghanistan, and we've had him on the air from there a couple times, and he's coming up in January. But you also got involved in sending some care packages over there?
Yes, we sent him approximately 70 or 80 different packages two or three times during his deployment, and he was very thankful, and I would be able to communicate with him by email at all hours of the day and night. Thank goodness for that 13-and-a-half-hour difference in time. We were able to communicate very well.
And we introduced you to Chuck Haas up at the Hugo Yellow Ribbon, and I understand you've been supplying them with contraband.
That's right. I have an opportunity through donations through Caribou Coffee for 16 stores throughout the Twin Cities, and they provide me with between 300 and 500 pounds of coffee a week, which Mr. Haas was kind enough to send to Kuwait. And along with his ton of other goodies of home, and it's worked out real well. Chuck Haas is able to take anything that I have and send it over to our troops overseas.
So you've met some good partners over those years, and now you're teamed up with Ms. Les Hansen.
That's right. Good networking.
So are you ready to take this over? I understand he's thinking about doing something called retirement?
Yep.
That was Les saying, yep.
Yep.
And you're smiling, a big smile there, Les.
I never thought I'd look forward to the day when I didn't have to be a productive part of society. But actually, that's not true because I'm going to retire in April, and the first stop is a service center out at the airport to donate as much time as they can take from me for greeting and helping our men and women of the United States services come through the airport.
That's terrific. And Mike, have you had enough time with Les so you figured out this whole program?
A little bit. I'm still asking a few questions now and then, and he's still giving me some good guidance.
All right, guys, we've got to take a short break. When we come back, I want to dig into the Toys for Military Kids a little bit and find out who you benefit and how you deliver the toys and how you raise your money. We're speaking with Mike Clark and Les Hansen from Toys for Military Kids on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and today's show we've been talking to Les Hansen and Mike Clark about Toys for Military Kids, Toys the number 4 Military Kids. And Les, tell us again, how long has that been around, and what's the mission, and where did it start?
Our 12th year currently is under process, and I guess the mission is to supply the toys for our military children, regardless of what rank the parent is. And it's just a way for us as civilians to show our appreciation for all the sacrifices that these men and women have given for our freedom.
And most of this activity is right here in Minnesota?
Primarily in Minnesota. However, we have taken care of some out-state units or out-of-the-state units that support, and some of our soldiers are actually assigned to.
And is there a website or a place we can go for more information?
VESEY, V-E-S-S-E-Y, 5401.org.
VESEY, V-E-S-S-E-Y, 5401.org.
That's correct.
And once they get there, then they'll see Toys for Military Kids.
Yep, they can navigate. Just put in toys in the search box, and up it'll come.
Okay, and we determined in the first segment that you're thinking about retirement. So in order to facilitate that, you went out and recruited this poor, innocent civilian sitting here next to us, Mike Clark.
Yeah. Well, you know, Tom, I thought that the obvious connection was the Yellow Ribbon, since they're throughout the state of Minnesota, and what an opportunity for a group of people that are working on helping out the military to take a program that I started that's been very successful and run with it. And actually, I'm hoping that it'll become even bigger.
So, Mike, you volunteered to, after you were coursed a little bit, you volunteered to take over this project from Les for maybe the next 10 or 12 years. And even though we aren't going to let her talk on the radio today, we've got Annette Kuiper in the studio listening to us. And tell us, how's the reaction to this program at the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon networks?
The reaction has been phenomenal. I've been able to call all around the state to ask favors for different units to help out with Santa Claus and things of that nature, and any help that I need, it's just a phone call away to any of the communities that are in the Yellow Ribbon and businesses as well.
Now, Les must have gave you a goal for this year. How many toys are you trying to find, and how much money are you trying to raise?
There is no goal. I guess the bar has been pretty high up through the last 10 or 12 years. We're just trying to hopefully get as much as we can and make all the children happy that we can.
So you're out looking for toys that are do you break those down by ages? Are there specific things you're looking for?
We do have age groups of 0 to 2, 2 to 5, 6 to 9, and 10 to 13. And it's the 6 to 9 and 10 to 13 that we're having a little bit of quandary with. Being a grandparent, I can tell everybody out there that the 0 to 5 two age groups are going to be thoroughly spoiled, because my wife's had a chance to go out and do that shopping, so she's taken care of them real well.
So when you get donations in the form of money, then you use those to fill in the gaps in the toys?
That's correct.
And what are the types of toys you need the most?
The 6 to 9 boys and girls, 10 to 13 boys and girls. Games, not being a...
Like board games, something like that?
Things like that, yeah. There's also some scientific things through Smithsonian that we've been able to pick up. We're trying not to duplicate at one party the same toy for more than one person. So that's been a little challenging, but so far we've met that goal.
So Les, on your website, do you have like a list of the toys, the type of things that people can donate?
No, pretty much. It's just a way for them to donate. And then, of course, there's a phone number if they want to call and ask what they can do to help. But most of it through the website is all pretty much cash, well, credit cards.
So if they go to VESEY5401.org, and we'll have a link to that up on our Minnesota Military Radio website, they can actually find a phone number, call one of you folks, and say, what do you need the most and how fast do you need it?
That would be me.
That would be Mike. All right. So if I called you today, what are you looking for, Mike? Specifically, what kind of things?
Well, again, that's the 6 to 9, 10 to 13-year-olds. And the majority of the people that are going to get those probably have those age group children, either as grandchildren or children themselves.
So they've got a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
We're speaking once again to Les Hansen and Mike Clark from Toys for Military Kids on Minnesota Military Radio. All right, Mike, I want to come back to you now. How do you spend all year raising money and piling up toys, and I know you had a pile of them in your house. You were telling me that story about your grandkids saw those toys and they couldn't touch them.
That is correct.
That had to be just torture for them. You're a naughty man, Mike.
Yeah. Our 3-year-old was carrying one toy around for 2.5 days, just knowing that he couldn't open it, but still looking at it with desire.
Now, you've got these toys and the cash, you buy toys to fill it in. How do you distribute the toys?
Well, there was an application that was sent out through the Bloomington Training Center to throughout the state for people to sign up for the opportunity to do this. And once that was done, the application started coming back, and we had 27 different units that signed up for this opportunity and gave us the number of toys that they needed and in the age groups desired. So then we went out and filled that, also indicated if they wanted a Santa or not. And once we had that done, the drill weekend is the 6th this year, so we have 15 parties going on this weekend, and then another 9 parties going on next weekend. There are a couple more in a little bit later in December and one in January.
So these are Minnesota National Guard units?
Yes. We also distributed toys yesterday at the AUSA meeting from a group that came from Wausau and Eau Claire that came to the AUSA meeting, so we made the transfer there.
So did you raise enough toys and enough money this year, or are you a little short?
Well, we can always use more money, but we've been able to meet our goal of getting the toys out for this current week and the next week.
Now, Mike, if we've got a military family out there that's in a bad way and looking for some toys for this Christmas for their kids, what do they do?
They can just give me a call. The number is 651-235-9181.
And there's a number at the website that we'll have the link up to.
Yep, and email as well.
And you keep these, the recipients, it's anonymous.
Yes.
They call up, they get the toys, take care of Christmas, get back to work.
Yes.
Okay, now we've got a lot of listeners out there on stations all over the state. We're up to 22 stations with the Minnesota Military Radio Network. If our listeners want to help, what would you tell them to do?
I would say give me a call, email me at msclark454@comcast.net or the phone number 651-235-9181.
And you could use toys or money.
That's correct.
Do you need some volunteers as well?
Right now we have a cadre of cadets that are going outside the perimeter of Eagan to pick up toys, and I've engaged the help of the Eagan High School. There's a military support group there, and they're doing everything within Eagan. So I've been very very good at taking Les's lead for networking and being able to get other people to help.
All right, good luck, Mike, and I hope you run this for many years, and we'll try to have you on again next year and get a report. Les, we just got about 30 seconds left. They're yours.
Well, thanks, Tom, for all your support and all of you that have helped out this toy drive, and God bless America, and I hope someday I can come back and be on the air again and reflect upon my time in Arizona during the winter.
Well, we'll look forward to talking to you in the future, Les.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, thanks for joining us today. That was Les Hansen and Mike Clark from Toys for Military Kids on Minnesota Military Radio. In a moment, we'll be back to talk about the prosthetics available for our wounded warriors. Please stay tuned. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we'll hear the latest on prosthetics available for our wounded warriors, but first it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shalito.
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. In the early morning of December 7th, 1941, hundreds of Japanese fighter planes took off from aircraft carriers in the Pacific Ocean. Using broadcasts from Honolulu radio stations to navigate, the planes arrived off the coast of Oahu, Hawaii at 7:55 a.m. For the American people, the attack on Pearl Harbor marked the first of 1,351 days of war. It mobilized 16 million young Americans to join the armed forces. 300,000 would die in battle, and another 600,000 would become casualties. Each and every day, I am reminded of the sacrifices our Pearl Harbor veterans made as I see the 4-inch gun from the USS Ward that sits just west of the Veterans Service Building here in St. Paul. We honor and remember our heroes who are with us today and those who have passed.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is Martina Bucci from the Minneapolis Healthcare System to talk about prosthetics. It's more than artificial limbs. Martina, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Martina, can you tell us a little bit, how do you train to get into this field of work? What's your educational background?
Certainly. Prosthetics is unique to the VA. There's not a private sector counterpart to benchmark against or service that's provided to outside facilities. The official name is the Prosthetics and Sensory Aids Service, so it's not limited to artificial limbs. My background is in business education and public administration.
That doesn't sound like a pathway to get into prosthetics.
It does not, but management, certainly.
Okay. And how long have you been at the Minneapolis VA?
I've been there 7 years.
And did you start out in this position?
Yes, sir. I've been not in this position, but within the department. I started out as a purchasing agent, and I have actually worked in every non-clinical position within the department, and now as the director.
And I understand that your father served in the military.
He did. Yes, he does.
Can you tell us about him?
Sure. He's a general serving in NORTHCOM right now, based out of Colorado Springs.
And did his military career have anything to do with you having an interest in joining the VA Medical Center?
Oh, without a doubt. It certainly keeps the mission very focused for me and meaningful. I can relate to every patient on some level or another that comes through our doors, either having lived somewhere where they have lived or has known my dad or worked with somebody that has known my dad. So it's makes it very meaningful.
So you moved around quite a bit when you were growing up.
Every 2 years.
So you've been all over the United States, I suppose.
All over the U.S. and Western Europe.
And how is it out at the Minneapolis VA? I'm a patient out there. It's a wonderful facility. A lot of folks come and go out there every day.
Absolutely. We see, through the prosthetic service line, we see about 60 to 70% of our total census that comes through the medical center. So everybody touches us on one level or another.
So I can see, being a military brat, if so to speak, that that you might be interested in the VA and helping veterans. But how did you get interested in prosthetics?
The prosthetic specialty was something that came secondary to my passion for healthcare. I knew I always wanted to work in healthcare. That's a mission that you can be supported and inspired for any field that relates to it. The prosthetics piece, that was all provided for on-the-job training as far as that goes. But we have a clinical team within the department that the clinicians that are certified prosthetists and orthotists that do that piece of it. Then we also have an administrative component that does all the procurement for the durable medical equipment and other items and services that come through the department.
Martina, I've seen and read that every time the United States goes off to war, like World War II, Korea, Vietnam, the Kuwait, Afghanistan, Iraq, the medical profession takes a big leap and they learn more and more. Has that impact been felt in prosthetics as well?
Oh, without a doubt, not only for artificial limbs, but for assistive technologies as well. Patients are living with various comorbidities with more severe injuries than they ever have been. So the technology, the R&D that goes into the technology is growing and changing every day. And all of those devices and services come through my department.
So since 9/11/2001, we've got a lot of service people that have survived injuries that they might not have survived in prior wars. And because of that, has that changed your industry?
Without a doubt, it has certainly affected our budget. These technologies are not cheap, and that is something that has grown exponentially as the prosthetics and sensory aids budget over the years, most recently within the past decade within VA. The other piece is the training that's required for clinicians and the competencies that are required for them to know how to best use these devices and equipment and services for our patients.
We're speaking with Martina Bucci on prosthetics. She's part of the Minneapolis VA healthcare system on Minnesota Military Radio. Martina, is it true that since World War II and for some years after that, the prosthetics industry was kind of stuck? There weren't many new changes. When we think about artificial limbs, legs, arms, those type of things.
Absolutely. With each major war conflict, that's when the real advances in R&D for artificial limbs takes off. And it, you know, before the Civil War, then it was the World Wars, then Vietnam, and now the OEF-OIF conflict.
And I would guess that technology has changed a lot of that as well.
Absolutely. And the ability, technology, and then just the ability, the funding that's available. This most recent conflict has had, without a doubt, the most aggressive changes in the artificial limb industry.
So there must be a wide variety of services and prosthetics that you provide today that maybe 15, 20 years ago weren't available.
Correct.
Can you give us some examples from the simple? I'm assuming you still do the artificial legs and arms, and mm-hmm. and then there's probably some things that are helped by technology to do things that they just weren't able to do before.
Absolutely. For the artificial limbs, specifically the technologies that are within the componentry of the device is what has changed in most recent years. There's componentry that's on the Mars rover that was developed by NASA that's in one of the knees that we provide to patients that helps the patient mimic the most natural gait to an able-bodied patient. And that's where you see the most changes. It's not something that is visible necessarily just to look at the device, but it's what's inside and what the device is able to do.
So it's more than just a limb. It's something that's kind of a smart device.
Absolutely. There's computers and wires and Bluetooth technology. There's all kinds of things that go on in the componentry that it's not visible on the outside of the item.
There must be a lot more training for the patient too, then.
Oh, absolutely. The trust is the biggest issue, to trust the device to do what it is supposed to do. That is one of the biggest pieces that come with the patient education.
So if we get a service member back that's maybe lost a leg, mm-hmm. above the knee, something like that, and they go through the healing process, they go to the hospital, then they come to someone like you, and you have to specially fit them with something that fits, and then how long does it take to train them to trust it and use it?
That process that you just described is very accurate. The time it takes for the trust is going to be different for each patient. We provide the training in-house, part of the amputation system of care. We have an amputee team here in Minneapolis that's made up of physicians and therapists and then prosthetic representatives and then prosthetists, and they develop the game plan for how to fit the limb, and it is customized, it's fit for that person, and then the gait training goes along with that, and that varies by each patient how long it can take.
Martina, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk about prosthetics today in 2014 and the big difference between now and the end of World War II. We're speaking with Martina Bucci about prosthetics on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been talking with Martina Bucci about prosthetics. She's a member of the Minneapolis VA and an expert in this area, and the daughter of a general officer in the United States military. It's still got to be just fun to think about your dad being a general, isn't it?
It is. I'm very proud of him. It's, I think, quite remarkable to have somebody that is enlisted 30 years ago and is now a general officer.
Now you talk about him, and you look like you're talking about him as your hero.
Yeah, he absolutely is.
Well, that's terrific. Martina, can you tell us, when we're talking about prosthetics, how does a veteran qualify for prosthetic services from the VA healthcare system?
If a veteran is enrolled, has primary care enrollment in the VA, they're eligible for our goods and services. Some of our specialty programs, the home improvement, structural alterations, the auto adaptive, clothing allowance, major med, some of those require certain service connection requirements. But by and large, if you are enrolled in VA healthcare system, you are eligible for our benefits.
So this does go beyond artificial limbs into modifications to their home and other things to allow them to live as normal life as possible.
Absolutely. We provide durable medical equipment that can include activities of daily living for patients that need help eating their modified utensils. We do home blood pressure cups for patients who need to monitor their blood pressures, bed wedges, walking aids, canes, crutches, rollators, things like that. We also provide the surgical implants for the patients. Anything that leaves the medical center with a patient, less pharmaceuticals, comes through my department.
What would be an example of a surgical implant?
A pacemaker, an ICD.
Okay.
A hip replacement.
Martina, can you walk us through, let's say we've got a service member that was injured with an IED and maybe lost a limb or two. Mm-hmm. From the time of that injury till the time they walk out your door and they're able to get back to some normal type of life, what are the steps they go through and how long does it take in general?
Sure. If it's a traumatic amputation, similar to what you described, it might take a little bit longer, the healing time. There's a lot of other elements to consider, both mental health, physical therapy, any other comorbidities or injuries that may have affected the patient. Once the patient's the residual limb is healed completely, they are able to start casting for a socket. Once that socket is completed, and that can be done, in some instances, it can be done within 24 hours. If there's a uniqueness to the residual limb, it might take a little while longer to modify the stump or the socket so it fits better. The patient can start walking on it right away. They start the gait training right away, I should say. We can have patients trained within a week.
And I would assume that some of the patients take to it quicker than other patients. Some of them might take a long time.
Without a doubt. Some can be up the first day they get on it and they're running down the parallel bars. Others, it takes several weeks or even months. And industry-wide, the compliance usage for patients to use their artificial limb is actually very low. It's below 50%, but within the VA, it's actually 80%.
So there's a psychological aspect to getting used to the fact that you have to have some help to get back to walking again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the VA does a great job of the patient education and just an integrative team approach to the treatment of amputees and getting them to be giving back to how they were living before.
So it could take months and multiple surgeries to heal and get stabilized. Mm-hmm. And once you're completely healed, then you take a cast of the body part to make sure that it fits perfectly.
Yes, sir.
And then a matter of weeks after that to get them trained and comfortable and to build that trust you talked about earlier.
Absolutely. They can be walking out of the hospital on their own in a couple of weeks.
And we've seen a lot of them come through here and on the radio show and even at golf tournaments.
Yeah.
our service members are surviving things they didn't survive before and they're getting back to normal lives or as normal as possible. They're just doing some amazing things, aren't they?
They are. It's wonderful to see people that are able to resume their previous lifestyle before their amputation or ones that have improved their lifestyle post-amputation. Those are the stories that are really meaningful and make it worthwhile every day to come to work when you hear those stories.
So Martina, since 9/11/2001, as we've said, there's a lot of service members that have gone through this process because they've survived. The VA must have learned things to push that technology much further than it was 14 years ago. Are we sharing that with the civilian population?
Absolutely. We're actually partnering with the civilian population. Our research department here at the Minneapolis VA is made up of physicians, prosthetists, and engineers that are working together with the Mayo Clinic, the U of M, DOD, and some international and community partners in the industry to improve the componentry of the artificial limbs.
So what we've learned at the expense of the military is benefiting the entire population once again.
Absolutely.
We're speaking with Martina Bucci from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System on Minnesota Military Radio. Martina, last time I was out at the VA hospital, I saw some wheelchairs, and they all look a little different. Is there some new technology for wheelchairs as well?
There are wheelchairs that are just your basic manual wheelchair that's operated by the patient, that's driven by their arms propelling the wheels. Then there's also the high-end wheelchairs that are propelled. They have their own motor and that are either the joystick or that are operated by the patient using different functions of their face, whether it's blinking or their mouth can operate. Prosthetics is similar to pharmacy in that in order to issue a device or a service, we have to have a consult or a prescription. The physical therapist and occupational therapist assess the patient for what they need, and then they send it the request to prosthetics to process, to order, and make sure all the fittings and everything are appropriate.
Sounds like you've got a real long list of resources and devices that you can use to help whatever the problem might be.
We do. We do. We have a walk-in wheelchair clinic, both in the main service, the prosthetics department, and in the SCI department for patients that need repairs and maintenance. And it's a multidisciplinary service line. We touch every other service in the hospital. So the learning curve is always steep, and the stories are always meaningful. We do change people's lives every day.
It's got to make you feel good when the veteran walks out the door and they're able to function better than when you first met them.
Without a doubt.
Martina, what's the future of prosthetics? How much change do you see coming?
It will always continue to change. Technology is growing in all industries, not just healthcare, but certainly within our field. We're working with new technologies that will help veterans improve their balance and walking ability and socket fit within the VA right now. And I anticipate us seeing some changes in prosthetic feet in the very near future as a result of those studies.
So would that be in range of motion or as you said before, the ability to help the veteran move better?
Both.
This is going to be kind of exciting, isn't it?
It is. The goal is always to mimic the natural gait as best as possible.
Martine, any final thoughts for our listeners?
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to know that you're out at the Minneapolis VA healthcare system helping all of our veterans, and keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Joining me now is David Anderson, the Wadena County Veteran Service Officer and also the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. David, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thank you, Tom.
How's everything going up in Wadena?
Well, it's actually warmed up. It's about 28 degrees and nice and sunny, so it's a beautiful day.
Great. I understand today you're going to educate me on what a Veteran's Choice card is and how it works.
Yes, that's the plan here. The Veteran's Choice card is a program that was started by the VA to, one, reduce the miles that a veteran has to travel to go to the doctor, and also to reduce the wait time. Now, the first set of cards went out, and those cards went out to veterans that were 40 miles or greater from any veteran healthcare facility. Now, that's including hospitals and outpatient clinics. So a lot of the veterans in Wadena County and some of the other outlying counties have gotten their Veterans Choice cards. Now, also, all veterans will get a Veterans Choice card, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. But now, how the Veterans Choice card works is if a veteran is greater than 40 miles from a VA healthcare facility, he has the option to go to a local healthcare facility and get treated. Okay. Now, when they get the card, the veteran will have to go ahead and authorize the card by calling the 1-800 number. Once the card is authorized, then anytime the veteran wants to go to the healthcare facility for medical services, he has to call the number on the card, get authorized to go to the doctor. And then that doctor visit will be paid for by the VA. Now, there is a couple little caveats with that. One, if the veteran is on Medicare, okay, the Veterans Choice Card will not work with Medicare. So the veteran has to choose if he either wants to use Medicare benefits or he wants to use the Veterans Choice Card benefits. The Veterans Choice Card benefits pays at the same rate as Medicare. Now, if a veteran has other insurance, the other insurance will be billed, and then the remainder can be billed back to the Veterans Choice Card as long as it's not Medicare. Now, for the second part of that, all the veterans will be getting a Veterans Choice card. Now, Tom, say I call up and I want a MRI on my shoulder, and I go to St. Cloud. St. Cloud says that we have got a 40-day wait period for an MRI on the shoulder. At that point, I can use the Veterans Choice card by calling them, explaining the dilemma, and then they can authorize to get that MRI done locally, and they'll pay for it.
So essentially, the Veterans Care Card is twofold. One is to allow the veterans to get care closer to home, and number two is to allow them to get care quicker in the event that they can't get the care speedily from the VA.
Yes, yes. Now, veterans have to realize that this is only a limited time period. I haven't got a firm date when they're going to go ahead and end this time frame, but from what I was told, the Veterans Administration received like $35 billion to implement this.
So this is an interim program that's until they get things under control and speed up the wait times for the veterans at the regular facilities.
Yep, you're exactly 100% right.
All right, David, thanks for joining us today. And once again, to all our veterans out there, if you got questions on the Veterans Choice Card, get your DD-214, your discharge, and go see your local county veteran service officer, and they'll be happy to help you.
All right. You have a happy holiday, Tom.
Thanks, David. Thanks for joining us today. That was David Anderson, the Wadena County Veteran Service Officer. We're just about out of time. If you have a mailbag question or suggestion for a topic you'd like us to address, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Les Hansen, Mike Clark, Martina Bucci, David Anderson, Commissioner Larry Shelado of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we hear from our Minnesota soldiers currently deployed to Egypt. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.